B3, number 25A.
Another point that makes Mrs. Edith to be an extraordinary scientist compared with normal science of her time was that already in her age she found the laws of translatability and could see that the science would have to incorporate in its scientific nature the law of general translatability. Yesterday we were indicating what is implied with that term already, so I don't have to repeat it anymore. But it is this, that today in all fields of science they are asking and looking for that law of translatability which would explain to them why a phenomena, when translated to another realm, is appearing in as a completely different form, that it changes its form without losing really its primal or primeval identity. We took that example of the ray of light that finally comes out as ugly or as beautiful, because it goes through those many stages of transformation when it hits the eye, when from the eye it is brought to the attention of the brain, where it is again transformed into a color, and the color then again is transformed by our psyche, by our aesthetical consciousness, into ugly or into beautiful or whatever it is. This terrific law of translatability is naturally the law that can finally explain why things that seem to be absolutely different and even opposed to each other are actually one. That there is a oneness, and that in the signs of oneness we never lose that oneness, though the phenomena that appears seems to be absolutely contradictory. This was the main part of yesterday's discussion on logic. And we see that Mrs. Eddy really wrote her textbook on the basis of this general translatability, that she was able to translate the highest concept of science itself as absolutely pure science, could translate it to the level of divine science, then to the level of absolute Christian science, where the synonymous terms are brought out as ideas and appear as ideas and no more as synonymous terms, and then translated it to the level of Christian science, where these ideas bring about first the analysis and then the uncovering of error, and error appears, but still behind it is idea, until finally the error yields to the idea. So that there is a terrific vertical sense of translatability which brings all in the universe into one coherent, harmonious whole. So she can unify the whole world, every plane of experience, into oneness. Whereas in the dualistic thinking, we always have at least two universes to deal with. So in this way, she was giving the answer to that question which comes up in all fields of science today: how does an original form transform itself? What are the laws of transformation? And we have seen, we find these laws, the laws of interdependence between the levels. That's why the chart is so necessary to understand. Without understanding those laws of transformation, the textbook actually doesn't make sense. Only when one understands these infinite laws of transformation can we also solve the apparent inconsistency in the textbook. We can solve those paradoxes which we have been considering yesterday, so that the textbook becomes paradox-free. it is now consistent in itself, and you know that the whole 11th chapter of the textbook is all engaged in showing that the textbook is absolutely consistent, that it grows out of one great root, and that everything is derived from that great root. But in order to present the oneness in its manifold phenomena, which even seems to be contradictory, she has to use a new logic. We were dealing with that yesterday, so I don't have to go into it further, but just to mention that actually that terrific contribution which Miss Essie gave to the world was that she could show that the classical logic is inadequate, that with the classical logic we cannot solve the problem of being, but two, that she was able to give a new logic. It is only recently, as we have seen yesterday, that the world at large asks for a new logic and is forced to find a new logic. But there we could see, Mrs. Eddy already had in her textbook that infinite logic. And the beauty of that infinite logic is that it does not discard the old way of reasoning, the normal science reasoning, reasoning according to law and effect, according to deduction and induction, that it does not the way with analysis and uncovering and annihilation, but that she overforms the classical logic into the logic of spiritual science. And we have seen how, starting out from the basis of the two-valued logic, Christian Science shows then the two-conceptual logic, then resolving the two-conceptual logic into a third value called understanding. Then when understanding is rising higher, it is a one-valued logic. But that one-valued logic, when it rises to the gestalt logic, becomes a four-valued logic. And so, in that way, as we rise higher and higher, we come to science itself with its infinite logic. But seeing that not one of these logics can be taken separately, or they do not make sense. Therefore, the logic of Christian Science takes in all those various logics in one, and then the textbook becomes really logical. So that the chart, as we have it, as a model representing the whole of being, actually contains all the various logics of Christian Science. This was a terrific achievement, especially at her time, when thought had not even been awakened that the classical logic was inadequate. Today it will be easier because thought has awakened to the point that classical logic is inadequate, but at her time nobody was talking about that. That was absolutely unknown, and classical logic was sacrosanct. You say sacrosanct, yes? And so nobody would touch it, but it took really the courage of a woman to really take away the basis of the old logic. All right, we go to the next point and see that Mrs. Eddy, as a representative of extraordinary science, was also introducing at her time a completely new concept of science. She introduced, namely, her discovery of Christian Science as an integral science, not as one other science next to the many sciences, so that she did not add to the many sciences that were in circulation just another one, as it happens today so often that everything, every object of investigation now is called another science. You even have now the science of death, you see, investigating the phenomena of death. You have all sorts of science, just adding another science next to the many existing science. But she did something else. She wanted to find the root science, so to say the proto-science, the first science, whatever we can call it, or the key science. That science on which all other sciences are built. It's something similar what Bertil Antwi tried to do with his general systems theory. He wants to find the science of systems, which would apply to any science. And this is what Mrs. Eddy did. She presented the fundamental proto-science, that is the fundamental science for all the sciences, built on this proto-science. Therefore, we have in her textbook all kinds of sciences. She speaks about the science of God. She speaks about the science of theology, the science of medicine, the science of the Bible, the science of marriage she even speaks of, the science of creation, the science of being, the science of man, the science of mind, the science of spirit, the science of life, the science of love. She speaks about the science of Christ, the science of Christianity. Can you hear? On that one proto-science, Mrs. Eddy herself built all the other sciences. What she therefore discovered was the science of all sciences. And you know that only recently, actually the first attempt as far as one can trace it was only made in the 30s of this century, that Polish scientists were beginning to tackle that question, is there not the science of all sciences? And only from then, during the war, that was dropped and nobody had time to investigate that, and only after the war, in the recent years, they took up that idea again. Isn't there a science underlying all sciences? They have the faintest idea that we are talking year in and year out about this science. Naturally, they can't see it because they are still thinking in the old paradigm of a science that must be tested through the testimony of the physical senses. But you can see the enormous impact that Mrs. Eddy must make in the future about for science, that she was investigating this proto-science. Among the sciences which she indicates and names, like the science of God, the science of man, the science of being, she has another science which she already was aware of. She speaks also of the science that govern changes, which is naturally seen today, nearly about 80 years after she wrote the textbook, was seen as the science of cybernetics, because cybernetics is the science that governs changes, that takes care of changes. And this is a terrific science, because it is a life science, because everything in being has evolution. Nothing stands still. Everything is in motion. Everything always changes. Is change acceptable? Should change be welcomed? What kind of change should be welcomed? Change should be welcomed as a revolutionary, evolutive change that leads mankind upward. We try to resist change then, when we feel that change is bringing us backward, when harmony seems to be lost through a change into discord. So somehow life is evolutive, always in motion, and therefore we must have a science that governs these changes. Which means that Christian science, as she presented it, is not the static science which just fixes once and for all the nature of being, but that shows the evolutive, the ever-changing sense of the science of being. This science of being has as its purpose to find those laws which will keep harmony intact in spite of change. We feel it is very easy to keep harmony intact without change. Let's just have it as it is. It's quite fine as it is, so let's have it. Let's not change it, because we fear change. We fear that change may bring a foreign element, a disturbing element. And actually, disturbing elements always come in. And so the science that governs the changes must govern those, the changes, so that the changes always bring forth harmony or more harmony, and never bring forth changes that bring us backward. Now, this is the idea of cybernetics, of the law of cybernetics, namely, to keep, in the terminology of cybernetics, the homeostasis, namely, that everything is kept intact, and the homeorese, which is that everything moves. Rese comes from moving, flowing, that in flowing we can keep up the harmony of being. That those things change, it does not change harmony. This is the idea of cybernetics. And Mrs. Eddy had presented in her science this idea of divine cybernetics, and when people say, but Mrs. Eddy doesn't speak about cybernetics, you just can say yes, naturally, because that term was only coined in the year 1948 by Professor Wiener. It's a new term, she couldn't know it, so she just took the understandable or more unpopular term, the science of changes, the science that govern changes. And she presented a science that would take care of these changes through a self-organizing system. As we see it on the level of divine science, that there it is a self-organizing system with a constant feedback, and in that feedback we see that by the feedback that self-organizing system takes care of all the negative influences that try to destroy the balance of being, the harmony of being, through an error preventing and through an error correcting circuit. I think a feedback loop, a feedback control, so that within that chart, really, you have the science of cybernetics stating on the level of divine science, really, the self-organizing system with its feedback. Then on the level of absolute Christian science, really, the error-preventing activity of that system. And on the level of Christian science, the error-correcting activity. Well, she has seen that long before the world was aware of it. What else defines her concept of science in a new way than in the old classical orthodox term of the word? The normal science concept of science has no purpose in view. A science is purposeless. It is neutral. It is neither ethical nor non-ethical. It is just free from good and evil. It does not ask, is it used for good? Is it used for evil? Can it be used for good? Can it be used for evil? In this way, it's absolutely value-free. It does not evaluate the merits and demerits of a science. It is purposeless. It has no aim to arrive at, to which it steers towards. But Mrs. Eddy's concept of science was just the opposite. That her science is teleological, her science is geared to achieve a fulfilled end, an end of perfection, of absolute fulfillment. It is a science that right from the start has the goal in view. It is therefore goal-directed. Therefore, the cause already has the goal within the cause. It is goal-causality. Therefore, her science is meaningful, is saving, aiding, and never destructive, which you can't say of any other science. Any other science can be used for good and for evil. This is now the great issue which is now being asked by the scientists in every field. Do we actually define science rightly? This is now questioned. It has never been questioned before the atom bomb. Today it is questioned from all sides, from the side of atom bomb, because of the ecological situation. More and more it is questioned, did we actually have a right definition of science? Is it right to define science with valueless? You know what I mean with value? Or let's not valueless, let's say value-free. You don't evaluate it and say a science is only science when it is good. But today they question that and see that science could destroy mankind. And is that a science? Is that knowledge? Is that wise? Is that wisdom? Is science wise? Is that wisdom? If it is only used to destroy mankind, and it's possible even today, if it would be used in that way to wipe out the whole mankind just within a few seconds. Is science humane? That was always denied. Science must not be humane. It is just neuter. But Mrs. Eddy sees that a real science must be humane, that divinity must embrace humanity. She sees that it must help humanity, it must save humanity. And so you can see that she had already a concept of science which was far above the concept of her contemporaries. Let's take another aspect of science. At her time, nobody had a sense that science should be a structural science. The classical concept of a science was always interested in the process of analysis to the nth degree. It was taking the whole, splitting up the whole into two, then splitting up one of those twos again into fours, and the fours into eights, and the eights into 16, and the 16 into 32, until the nth degree, until finally you had a science about every little thing in the world, and you have the specialist just being interested in just one beetle or anything like that. So it's the science of a beetle, of a special beetle, or even of the organism of a special beetle, things like that. If one actually reads the title of theses that are being written in the universities today, because they can't hardly find out anymore a new subject for the students to write the thesis about, so one can see the general development was towards more and more specialization and specification. Only today the reverse process is now considered. They have begun to see that we have all the specialists in the world we want to have, but that everyone did not know what the other one was doing, and therefore there was no synthesis, there was no integration, and therefore the whole was no more working harmoniously, because nobody was anymore contemplating the part within the whole, the gestalt of this science. But Mrs. Eddy, right from the beginning, though she has used, as I said, the method of classical orthodox science like analysis, she went much further than that, that her idea was the synthesis, the integration into one whole, that actually the starting point of her reasoning is always from the infinite one, from the whole, translating it down to the part, but then taking the part back to the whole. So she was interested in this integral science, in a, and seeing that integral science through categories and structure. No textbook in the world is written the way the Christian Science textbook is written. All the textbooks are all written in a linear, rational line, in a sequence that is rational as far as possible, but always linear. Whereas the Christian Science textbook can be read both ways. It can be read linearly, then it gives the way of life, but it can also be read structurally, then it gives the whole model of being, capital B.